Today's episode of Shockwaves is brought to you by Incarnate, in theaters on December 2nd. Incarnate follows a scientist with the ability to enter the subconscious minds of the possessed. He must save a young boy from the grips of a demon with powers never seen before while facing horrors of his past. So grab a friend, check out Incarnate in theaters on December 2nd. Okay, and welcome to episode number 26, part one of Shockwaves. I'm your host, Rob Galluzzo. Sitting with me is Mr. Elric Kane.
In the deep end of sausage parties.
Hey now, what does that mean? Oh, right.
Look around. What do you
just
think it means?
Guys today. It's just and Ryan Turek.
It's only going to get worse.
It's only going to get worse.
Becca's in a hospital
Just after we get a great write-up about Becca's inclusion. We just kick her out.
We squeezed her out this week.
Becca's
down for the count this week.
She's down. We are sending her well wishes. She's okay. Don't worry.
As
far as we know.
Could have gotten a lot worse since
She texted us and she emailed us that she had to use her epidermal. Which, unfortunately, Elric and I did not get to stab her in the chest with it like we wanted to. Yeah. Apparently, it goes in her leg anyway. So we would have been really, we probably
break the chest bone.
We would have done it worse.
That's all I know.
And it's not very dramatic. It is literally just a like insert.
Pen in the leg.
Yeah, it's a pen in the leg.
Not in my mind. It's not right.
So she's not feeling well and will not be joining us for this or the second part of this, which is the interview. So well wishes to Becca. She'll be back soon enough. But we're here. We're here to guide you, entertain you, talk about horror and all that good jazz. Let's dive right in.
Let me ask you guys something.
Well, because we
gave everyone that positive episode last week. It was about escapism. It was right after the election. This isn't our topic yet, but I do want to ask
dark?
You. No, I want to ask you personally if you guys jumped straight back into horror, because I just realized unconsciously that I didn't watch anything for almost a whole week till about 2 days ago.
Oh, really?
And it was unconscious. Like, I wasn't trying to stay away from horror. I just realized I didn't feel like watching anything.
Yeah, same here.
I did a palate cleanser. I watched Star Trek Beyond.
Yep.
Because I had never seen it.
Fun.
It's great.
Really good
great
film. Yeah. Really, really good movie. I was really surprised.
Best usage of Beastie Boys yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't deny that.
It was funny. I was like, oh, they're doing a callback. This is fantastic.
That's great.
But really good movie. But I did a palate cleanser. I watched Star Trek Beyond, and then I dove right back in. I was like catching up on it. I have a stack of Blu-rays.
You haven't got much choice.
Yeah.
your job depends. I was surprised by that. It was an unconscious feeling. There was just something in the mood where I didn't feel drawn. And the one that got me back into watching something, I went away for the weekend, which was also helpful, I think, mentally, to just get out of your life for a couple of days. It was actually Black Mirror, the thing I would have wanted to avoid
because
I feel like a lot of people commented, we're in an episode of Black Mirror. That was kind of the joke.
Yes. And even the creator said, no, this is not an episode of Black Mirror.
But I was staying with family, and they were like, you've got to watch episode 2 of season 3, which I hadn't yet because it's a horror film. And it was directed by the guy who did 10 Cloverfield Lane.
It is a
really fun episode.
I've only seen the first one with Bryce Dallas Howard so far.
Not Damien Chazelle. Dan Trachtenberg.
That's
right.
And this one is like a guy who's basically traveling around. He's an American traveling overseas for money on his OE, and he finds out if he can get paid to be in an immersive video game. So there's an element, again, of the kind of things we've been talking about a lot lately, and it's a horror video game. And it's by a very famous Japanese designer and all the rage, but super high-end intellectual property secret. So he goes to an actually haunted house where he's injected with something and he's going to have these experiences. I won't tell you anything more. It is super, super fun. Like, it's a great episode.
Yeah.
And then I chased that. After that, I was kind of like back in. It was like 1 week down and back
on board.
And then I only watch, because I want to savor this, because this show is so fucking strong. Like, just in general, Black Mirror
I think that's
so
a general consensus, too, because I haven't seen anybody completely binge it.
Yeah.
They're like savoring it and letting it play out
on
Facebook amidst all the political posts I've been seeing on a rant, on a constant basis. Every once in a while, it's like, I just caught up with Black Mirror episode 4 or 5 or whatever. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Episode 3, the guy that was my brother-in-law was saying to me, you know what? I watched episode 3 and then I just had to stop for a while because it is so dark. this, and it's beautifully shot. This one's by another good film director, James Watkins, who made Eden Lake.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote The Second Descent and things like that. This one is, this is very close to the tension experience. Not the experience I got, but what Andrew went through on the show, how he talked about months of doing stuff without knowing. It's literally a story about people getting, sending you messages and you have to do the thing, otherwise something bad will happen. But you don't really know where it's all headed. Mm-hmm. And it is bleak and bleak and bleak and dark, but it just, it, the cleverness of the show.
Is there a way out? I mean, like, you're getting messages. Can you, do they establish
they have
really
stuff
early on?
You. That, yeah, straight okay, away they establish, it, but you don't know what they have on everyone. Right. That's kind of the twist, where the twist is going. It's, it, again, and every episode I've ever seen, I've never seen a bad episode. There's a couple that are weaker than others. So far this season, they've all been
like, pretty top notch.
I'm 3 for 3, like, and I'm going to wait till next week to dive back in. But it's so cool to see something that, that even though we're all joking, we're in an episode of Black Mirror, the thing is it uses its brain so well that it connects to you in a way and kind of actually gives you a little bit of fight back.
Oh, yeah.
And realizing we're not slaves to this Black Mirror. You know?
It definitely makes you – yeah. No, I mean, I think it's some of the sharpest satirical writing right now. It's like my biggest influence is Black Mirror.
Yeah,
just because I just like the idea of taking something – you could tell a great story just by getting a really great sci-fi conceit, but it's not about the sci-fi conceit. It's about how people respond to it.
Mm-hmm. And making it really about the individual.
Well, exactly.
Not the universal concept.
It really is. I mean, like a modern-day Twilight Zone, isn't it?
Yeah. Big time. Like, it's the closest thing
limits,
we've had.
You know, it's the closest thing. I mean, we've had a few try to skirt it. We've seen them reinvigorate the Outer Limits and Twilight Zone to varying degrees of success. But, I mean, to do something that legitimately puts its own stamp and voice on today, and tell a very horrifying or thrilling story is just like.
And I feel a part of that is because we've never been this close to science fiction. We're actually in a moment in history where we move towards science fiction really quickly. Like some of these things they do in some of these episodes could happen in the next couple of years with VR.
Yeah.
Like especially the one where Robert Downey Jr. bought it, where you record things with your eyes. Yeah. I mean, that literally could be around the corner for all we know. So I think that's where that show's really crushing it. It's just good stuff and kind of just got me back into the swing. And watched last night Train to Busan, which I hadn't seen.
Oh, yeah.
Went to that last night with Dick and a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I straight away was just like, it's 28 days Snowpiercer. I mean, literally these two like parts where they're going through the train are great. But, it's kind of cartoony in some ways, but in that great South Korean way where it's still emotional.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be. So it's super cheesy
by the
music
end,
as well.
By the end, like I said, I'm devastated. I'm just like,
It's hard for me to believe that there could be two South Korean movies in my top 10 this year. You're like, wow, like between the, and The Wailing's so different. But I actually prefer The Wailing on a personal level because it's so different. But Snowpiercer is a total crowd pleaser,
Right. And what's funny was I was talking to somebody about Train to Busan yesterday, and they told me, I would have to look it up because I'm drawing a blank on it, but he said that this is the director's first live action feature.
Mm.
He did
the cartoon.
He did a cartoon, which is apparently a prequel to this story. Kind of. And I was like, really? That's insane. So,
and now he's doing a sequel already.
Sun Ho Yeon is
the
director.
No, he's doing a prequel, right? I think he's doing a prequel about how it breaks out.
It's called Soul Station.
Soul Station.
Soul Station. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that is technically kind of a prequel to this thing.
Interesting.
But it's animated.
Yeah.
So that's...
I was wondering what the story with that was.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, cool.
But if you haven't seen it, I think it's still in some theaters.
I think it got a limited re-release. And I know it's coming, I believe, in December to Blu-ray and VOD.
And it's definitely a big screen film. That was
it is.
Because
it's
actually, rather than just being a zombie film, it's a disaster film first.
Right.
And then it's a horror film. So it's kind of like Poseidon Adventure or something.
Oh, no. It's like that Irwin Allen meets Danny Boyle kind of thing.
Which is super fun.
I love the distinct characters. Like there's one guy in particular. I remember after I saw it, the guy, you know who I'm talking about, I texted a photo of him to Ryan. I was like, this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, yep.
That's the guy you want to be, man.
That's the guy you want to be. And, again, when I was talking to somebody about this last night, it was when it comes to zombie stuff, because I think a lot of us are pretty sick of zombie movies, as long as you introduce at least one new element that I've never seen before, then I'm kind of on board. And this had one that I thought was really cool.
The physical side of them was interesting and fun. And there's one sequence towards the end with the train going and a lot of them, and I won't exactly ruin it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big shot, but that's a moment where you look at whoever you're at the movie with and go, oh, I wish World War Z did that. You can't help but go, you see a comparison because it feels real.
Yeah, no, that was definitely that thing that that was that beautiful moment that I was like, oh, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm really loving this beyond the characters and beyond the emotion. You know, this is what I'm really attracted to. And they're giving us something new to watch.
They're giving it all to me.
You know, I had a great experience watching. I may have already told you guys on the show before, so forgive the repetitive nature, but we have a little Korean movie theater here in Los Angeles that just shows Korean films. So that's where I got to see this several months ago. And the thing about it is, I think people, Korean people, just go to whatever's playing there. They don't know the movie. So it's me and my buddy Scott Reynolds, who are obviously horror nerds. And a lot of like couples, and in particular, there was an older gentleman next to us, probably in his 60s, with his wife. And I mean, we were watching his reaction. He was just jumping and like covering his eyes and covering his ears the whole time. And as soon as the lights went up, Scott just turned to him. He's like, I didn't think you were going to make it, man. Are you all right? It's like this little old man that was just sitting there. So,
so
it was really fun. Yeah, I strongly recommend it. I think it's a great
movie. And it's nice to see big movies being made outside of America, like movies that actually have budgets. And they can. It's not just a foreign film in that sense.
And the studios right now are trying to chase it. There's a couple studios that are chasing that.
But you know, again, tonally, how do you tonally, like you were saying, some things might be a little cartoony, but because of the...
Because there's a certain style.
Yeah, you root it in that, you know, that kind of... that father-daughter relationship, you know.
But South Korea also does do weird comic characters that somehow work.
Oh, yeah.
And it's always really kind
of...
I do think that'd be hard. I think an American remake would be a lot straighter.
Or
flat-out comedy, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Which no one needs. Especially a big-budget one, you know.
Yeah.
The last thing I saw, just rounding it up, I'm continuing my neo-noir re-evaluation of Val Lewton films. This is one I hadn't seen before, called Isle of the Dead. It's a Mark Robson film. It's, you know, the thing that Val Lewton, the real quality, if you go back and watch this box set at some point, the real quality is the silent moments, the mysterious moments, the moments that are kind of ambiguous they're next to nothing in cinema.
Is this Isle of the Dead?
Boris Karloff on Weird Island.
Yeah.
Is a general.
And there's a virus.
A plague has broken out. It's really cool.
It's really good.
The only downside to this one compared to some of the others, and I think it might be both the ones with him acting in it, is they're more talky. So the more talky parts are just not effective. Like, that's why Jacques Tenier ones are always so, like, cat people. It's just pure expressionism, right? This one, for me, isn't as effective until you get to the end, and then you get some really creepy moments. So it's like, and these movies are all 72 minutes. I mean, all of them. It's amazing.
But they feel longer.
Yeah, this one especially to me was the least effective so far. I still have to do the I can't remember what the Gravedigger one's called. And there's one where Boris Karloff Bedlam is. Yeah. I've never seen that one either. So I've got a couple more that I'm going to round out in November, and then I will post some links to the box set for you guys if you're. But it's been really rewarding.
I always did as a real gem.
Yeah,
I mean, like definitely see it. I remember I picked that up when I was in college. Was just kind of doing what you're doing. I was just kind of going through all that stuff, and I think I did Seventh Victim and Isle of the Dead as a double feature.
Yeah, Seventh Victim I think is brilliant. Yeah. You know, the more I think about it, it's so bleak. But this will appeal to you though. I have been thinking that the only person you could kind of compare him to as a producer is actually Jason Blum, and not in terms of the minutiae, because obviously Jason doesn't get in there and move around props,
right.
But in terms of having a stamp as a producer on your whole brand of a style.
Totally.
And a lot of it was RKO would just go, hey, you've got this budget and here's a title and you've got to make us a horror film. But then he put all the soul as a producer into it, and then he created kind of a formula and hired different directors. So I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting that I can't think of other producers who have recently, you know, Corman's obviously his own beast.
Right.
Because he actually directed.
And also Isle of Dead has kind of some of the stuff, like touches of what we do every once in a while, these little chamber pieces that are just, you know, very contained. And,
yeah, because that's what you can pull off. I mean, within a budget that you get. Yeah. So anyway, interesting. And I highly recommend diving into these when you get a chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
All righty. What about you, Ryan?
I caught a few things. The AFI Fest is going on right now here in Los Angeles. And there was this curious little documentary that I checked out earlier this week called Fear Itself.
Yeah, I've been trying to get it illegally from the UK BBC site. And it doesn't work here.
Oh, really?
But it's already on the BBC.
So it already debuted over there.
Over there, yeah. And you can watch, like, for anyone listening, you can watch the first, I think, 7 minutes of it on Vimeo. And after that, that's it.
Okay. It's a very interesting...
like an essay. It's like a film essay, right?
It is literally an essay.
Yeah.
But it's told through kind of a fictional means. Mm-hmm. It's written and directed by this kid. And I say kid. Yeah. Because he looks like...
I think he's 24 or something.
Looks like he's like, you know, like in his early, early 20s, you know, fresh out of film school. Everybody on the team, they all came out beforehand.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and his name is Charlie Landon, or Line. And it's basically a collection of horror scenes, you know. They're all accredited, and they all say in the lower left-hand corner, but they all kind of flow into one another while this woman talks about being in a car accident and then, or being in an accident and then having to go back and just watch horror movies. She was going to watch some horror movies and then her observations of horror movies as she went on this journey. And then it kind of segued into something about her sister and it made it very emotional. Hmm. So you're kind of doing an audience connection to the narrator and wondering what her story is. And then a connection to her commentary on horror films from how they kind of break down our own personal fears, you know, sociopolitical fears, you know, why would we want to kind of go into something that makes us terrified all the time?
Kind of like what we've been doing for a couple years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but it was done in a very kind of like eloquent,
yeah, felt kind of poetic,
way. Yeah. I don't know what the crowd overall thought of it, but it was funny because there was this weird disconnect that occurs because you're listening to her and you really want to like pay attention, but at the same time you get wrapped up watching the scenes. Uh-huh. So it's an eclectic mix of scenes that ranges from movies like Don't Look Now and some Cronenberg and stuff like that to full on like really obscure J horror, K horror kind of stuff.
Anything you didn't recognize?
Yeah, there were a few. A few that I was kind of like, oh, I needed to check that out, you know? And they all went by their original foreign titles. There was no English translated title, so it's kind of like, oh. Strangely, an absence of French and Spanish horror. I could be wrong on that, but
probably because of Brexit. He was done with them.
He was just like, fuck this. But Fear Itself was an interesting little, you know, interesting little experiment. Apparently the filmmaker did one about teen comedies.
Yeah, I saw that on his bio.
Something about Clueless or something like that. So I imagine it's kind of like the same experiment, which is like a dissertation on teen comedies while you're seeing these kind of things thematically play out based on what she's talking about.
Does it stay one note flat, or is there a moment where it builds to something bigger and you feel like, ooh, like the clip and commentary and like the nightmare, I feel like at times took
it
peaks.
It does, yeah, it does. No, there are peaks and valleys, yeah. No, that's the thing. And I think that's what I was missing from it. That's like a big criticism is it doesn't feel like you were building to it. But once this narrator started talking about her sister, you're kind of like, oh, this is going to go somewhere. Yeah. And it's going to build to this big revelation, you know. Kind of does, you know. And then it literally ends. Credits start rolling and the Mutilator Fall Break theme song starts playing.
What?
And I was like, wait a minute, what?
Wow. That's
very unusual.
That's an odd choice
it
to
is
close
very,
that out.
Very, very unusual. Wow. I was like, okay.
That's pretty funny.
I question where the filmmaker actually stands on horror films because beforehand they came out, you know, for a little introduction and they were like, obviously this is a dark time for America. This is really, you know, this is crazy. And we've just spent like the last 6 months really depressed because we've been watching a lot of these movies that you're going to see clips from. And I was like, I don't know if depression is something that you kind of want to walk away from, but you know, but it's all on the screen. It's all in the narration. I don't know when they're going to show it here.
Yeah. I'm wondering
here in the States,
but it's not a documentary.
It's not a documentary.
Because like that's a narrative, right?
Oh,
fictional
it's got a narrative, but it's just more analysis.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
When you go to like Dark Delicacies here in Burbank, you know, there's like those great analysis books, very like Carol Clover, Men, Women, and Chainsaws. It's about the closest I would say you can get to something like that. I've always wanted to do a Men, Women, and Chainsaws documentary,
that'd be cool.
But have that kind of thoughtful analysis kind of driving it without having to have – you know, the talking heads going, so this is what a final girl is. You know, it's just like having something cool play into it.
I did contact Carol Clover once for back in the old show, This Week in Horror, and she just said, I don't talk about that anymore.
Wow.
She just doesn't like that book. There's no reason to.
Wow. Well, all right. Whatever, man.
The other thing I watched is Body Snatchers.
Ferrero. Oh, cool. The Blu-ray?
Yeah, the Blu-ray.
It just came out from Warner Archive.
I've been holding out.
Beautiful looking. Really nice. Yeah. It's been some time since I've seen it. I just kind of bought it because I was like when it came out when I was in college and I was a huge fan. I even had the poster because I thought the poster was super cool. And Invasion of the Body Snatchers is an interesting series to me because I feel like you can keep updating it every decade, you know, and we've seen that how we saw, you know, the 70s, the 50s version. We saw the 90s version and then we saw the Invasion.
We saw it last week with half the country voting.
Yeah. Body Snatchers is an interesting movie because you could tell it's just Able Fighting Studio, like literally minute by minute from, I feel like, the soundtrack down to just some of the performances. To me, the movie has no second act. Hmm. It has no second act. It literally is about this girl who moves onto a military base with her father, who's part of the EPA, and he's doing some research into a chemical leak, or, so you know, how the military is handling the chemicals they have on the base. And what they don't know is that predominantly most of the bases are pod people, and they're systematically converting everybody into pod people, and they're after her family. So you have a lot of paranoia kind of playing, building up, and then the rest of it's just a chase. So yeah, it's just like build. Oh, you're not a pod person. Run, yeah, you know, and then that's it. It's just like a hide and seek game of hide and seek.
I got to revisit that. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's like been
that.
A while.
I remember it being kind of still having some Dark Abel stuff and a key suicide of one character that I remember being surprised.
Oh, yeah. Well, Forrest Whitaker is in it.
And Skeura, right? Annabelle Skeura? Is that
yes. Yeah. Wait a minute. From the girl. She's like a model. That's the lead?
I think so, yeah.
The Dark Abel.
Gabrielle Anwar.
Yes, that's her.
And Meg Tilly.
Ooh,
Meg
Tilly. That's right.
And Meg Tilly gives a terrific performance. Yeah, yeah. Super creepy. Yeah. She has this one moment where she does this whole, you know, where are you going to go? Where are you going to hide? You know, and it's fantastic. But it's a very unusual little early 90s horror movie. I don't know if it's entirely successful, but it has its charms. And it still kind of drives home, you know, all of the paranoia and fear that the previous Invasion of the Body Snatchers movies did. It's certainly a better film than the Invasion.
Yeah, much better. That's the fourth.
Never saw
of
that
the,
one.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
And Larry
it's
Cohen told flat, us yeah. that he did the story for this one, the Abel Ferrara, remember?
That's right, he did.
Yeah, but Stuart Gordon did the script.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Stuart
wow.
Gordon was
Gordon and I think Paoli.
Oh, really? That's crazy.
Got the credit
for
it.
What a weird combo. Director, you know, the screenwriting credit and story by.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that one's really good. So check that out if you can. And then I caught up to Waxwork after our last week's show.
Yeah.
I finally had to dig into my Blu-ray. And what a great movie that is.
It is. It's just fun,
it's
man. Pure fun.
It's such a fun.
I saw you post a Steak Tartare.
The Steak Tartare. Oh God! If you go to the Blumhouse Instagram, I had to put up the vampire talking about Steak Tartare.
I knew that was you.
But the funny thing is, you know, my girlfriend brought up a good point because it was her first time watching it, and she goes, "This is very Cabin in the Woods esque."
Yeah.
And I was like, "You know what? You're absolutely right, because it's all these kids being lured into horror movie tropes to unleash an ultimate evil."
Yep.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Huh. And I was like, wow, I haven't seen this.
Let's get Drew Goddard in here. Let's find out.
I know. Yeah.
Big fan of Waxworks or what?
Yeah. But the funny thing about Waxwork is just not so story driven, like in my work, I'm like super hypercritical of everything, and watching Waxwork, it's just so interesting to me that they pick off all of his friends, most of his friends in the first like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it's a little procedural, you know, kind of getting into it. And then it goes completely bonkers at the end.
Yeah.
You know?
That's my favorite structure.
It's so
one that just goes bonkers.
Well, no, because anybody else who would tackle it would just be about setup, Waxwork. Oh, isn't it creepy? Second act. Oh, all my friends are getting picked off. Third act, you know, escape and, you know, let's run away. But no. Hickox don't got time for that.
No.
He's just like, we gotta kill a bunch of people, lay down the rules.
Yeah. Spends a little too much time with the Marquis de Sade, to be honest.
A little too much. Oh, but she's freaky, man.
Oh yeah.
That girl is freaky.
Yeah.
Freaky. I was like, wow. I didn't realize how how sexualized she is.
Repressed.
Yeah.
Did you hit part two as well?
I'm gonna do that this weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
Have you ever seen
the second one?
Yeah. I remember not being too much of a fan.
Yeah. It's not that good, but the there's some interesting ideas in it. Bruce Campbell's got a really great part in there, and it's funny.
Yeah.
I watched his interview, and he said the only reason he did it is because he did Sundown and Retreat with Anthony, but more because he was getting ready to do Army of Darkness, and it was something like it was like 4 months away from starting Army of Darkness, which was going to be a huge studio, one of his big breaks kind of in the studio business. And he hadn't acted in a while. And he was nervous that he was going to
so
he literally
warm up a little bit.
He admits it. He's like, it was only like 4 days on Waxworks 2. Anthony's a good guy. I was like, whatever. It'll be a nice warm up for Army of Darkness. So I did.
That's amazing.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, he's very candid about it.
Well,
and his scene is hilarious. So
yeah.
I like that.
I just remember there was a Fango photo of him like with a pipe and like his chest is torn open or something like that. And I was like, that's a great operates still.
Well, his bit is his chest is torn open. And they keep throwing things at him that, you know, like salt and just
right.
things. And he's just pulling his Bruce Campbell. Ah, that stings. Everything's fine, though.
So good. And then lastly, have you guys checked out Scream Factory's Horror Hunters?
What's the scoop with this?
It's a 30-minute show that is basically like American Pickers, where it's about these two guys who basically go and visit the largest horror fan collections in the country. And so they go to one guy, and then they go to another guy, and basically they go there, they dig around in his collection, they see how crazy they are for horror, and then at the end of each segment they go, "So we want to make a trade. We really like this poster, so we brought you this." And then, you know, on the spot, they go, "Do you want to trade with us?" Huh. And they'll either go, "Yeah, maybe," or "No." And one time, one guy gets turned down. He's like, "No, sorry. I think it's like the Frankenhooker VHS." He's like, "I'll trade you all of this for the Frankenhooker VHS." And the guy's like, "Yo, I got Frankenhooker tattooed on my head, so I am not giving up this VHS." But it's amusing. It's like it's fun because you get to go behind the doors of these guys who have all these massive collections.
I wonder how they're finding
like,
them.
Outdo all of us combined.
Yeah, yeah. They found on their Facebook page alone. They can probably find
these
people.
Yeah, but it was cool. It was like oh cool. There's like a little horror collector show for us.
And it's on there. How do you see it?
It's on the Shout Factory TV, shoutfactory.tv or something like that.
Okay, which I think might also be a YouTube channel.
I think so. Yeah,
they might have their own YouTube channel as well. I'll have to look into.
But check it out. It's fun.
Cool. Yeah, I was curious. About
it'd be
that.
Cool to have a version of that where you're going looking for the pieces for the museum that they're doing. That you know, so people pieces and trying to get them for the museum. Yeah. I think that'd be a fun show.
Later, like a little Indiana Jones. Yeah. This belongs in a museum.
Not that for love, Dr. Jones.
Yeah. So,
what about you, Rob?
Yeah, no, it's funny because as Elric pointed out, I'm realizing all of my picks today are actually kind of fringe horror picks. Mm-hmm. I guess I was actually unconsciously staying away from horror because there's enough in the world. But that said, last week, the Cine Family, silent movie theater here in Los Angeles, hosted a, not even midnight, it was a couple hours before midnight, but a midnight screening of Doomsday, Neil Marshall's 2008 follow-up to The Descent. Haven't seen it in a couple of years. Still love it. The movie's crazy.
It's really good.
It's really – have you seen it?
If that was a car commercial for that car, there was moments when I was first watching where I was like, holy shit, the car's so clean and it's in the post-apocalyptic.
Oh, yeah. It was great. I mean, it was –
I haven't seen it in years.
If you haven't seen it, it's a mashup. It literally – you know, and he gave a very candid, fun Q&A after he was there and chit-chatted about it and – pretty much was like, I can't believe that the studio gave the money to make this
movie.
I think the studio said the same thing.
Yes, they did.
Rogue said the same thing.
That's funny.
Yeah, and you know, he admitted that he learned a lot of harsh lessons on this movie, and that's why he's glad he did it. But to me, I always joked with him. I was like, so let me get this straight. You walked into a Universal exec meeting like a 12-year-old kid and said, it's going to be like Aliens, and then it's going to be like Escape from New York, and then there's going to be Excalibur, and like and then we'll do car chases like Mad Max. And they said yes. And that's – so everything I just described is in that movie. Rana Mitra, probably the pinnacle of her greatness in anything. I know she did one of the Underworld movies and she was on Nip Tuck for a little bit.
Yep.
But she will never be hotter or more badass than she is in Doomsday.
Totally.
And he – you know, of course, it was fun because half the audience had not seen it. And they were really into it. So it was a great way to see it as opposed to when it came out when a lot of people didn't see it at all.
And we're all watching on DVD probably, most of us.
Yeah,
a big screen, I imagine it kills.
It was a lot of fun. And somebody in the audience asked him if he, you know, if it was success, would you have done a sequel? And he started to describe what his sequel idea was, but he's like, oh, I haven't thought about it in so long. And then like the next day, it all came flooding out. So I wrote an article about it directly from his quotes. He's like, this is exactly what my sequel would have been. And it sounded really pretty bonkers as well. So. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's one of, you know, it's a great little fun movie. If you're just looking for just like an adrenaline blast of craziness.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the, I feel like years after we're all dead and destroyed and like some alien race comes down and finds like Blu-rays and then they kind of like dig into film history and they go, what is this? And then they look at movies like, what's that movie? Your? Uh-huh. Or is and all those kind of like Italian action, you know, kind of weirdo post-apocalyptic movies, they're going to be like, oh, that's what Neil Marshall was trying to do.
something
really batshit crazy, you know?
Well, you know, the coolest thing about it, by the way, was, you know, there's a character in the movie, his name is Saul. I should have brought up his real name, but he, you know, he's like the crazy, like, leader of the cannibals with the mohawk. He's like right out of Road Warrior. And Neil said, he's like, that's a good friend of his. He's the guy in the opening scene of Dog Soldiers with the girl. And he's also the main creature in The Descent.
Oh, cool.
So he's been in all his first couple of movies. He was in all of them.
That's awesome.
So that was a lot of fun. And then I started digging into Shout Select, which is Shout Factory has Scream Factory for their horror titles. Mm. And now they've launched Shout Select, which is kind of, you know, culty movies, I would say. You know, some of the first releases were The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai and Roadhouse, like things of that ilk. Yeah. And the Bill and Ted movies.
Midnight Run under that?
Yes.
Oh.
So that's one of them as well. So the two that I watched are kind of horror-y. Nighthawks from 1981, which I'd never seen before.
Rucker Hauer and...
Sylvester Stallone is 1981, so it's right after... It's, I think, a movie or two after Rocky II.
I feel like that came up recently on our show, didn't it? Didn't somebody watch
Nighthawks? I think so. We brought up Nighthawks, but I love this movie. I'd never seen it before. I'll tell you where I recognize it from is... There, a lot of us grew up watching a 1984 film called Terror in the Isles, which is a compilation movie. It's, you know, hosted by Donald Pleasance. He's in like a movie theater and like, never know who's sitting behind you. And, you know, and then they show clips from all these movies. For a long time, it was on VHS. And then for a long time, Terror in the Isles was like impossible to put out because there's so many clips in it that the rights issues are or whatever.
Right.
But the Universal release of Halloween 2 has it as a bonus feature.
Right.
Oh. If it's a free bonus feature, there's no issue with rights. So technically, you know, obviously if you're a Halloween fan, you want Scream Factory's release of Halloween 2. But if you just want Terror in the Isles on Blu-ray, it is a bonus feature on the Halloween 2 Universal release. But yeah, a lot of – I don't know why they do a lot of the classic horror movies in there, and they spend a considerable amount of time on Nighthawks in Terror in the Isles.
Oh, yeah.
So as I was watching, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. It's pretty cool. And I read up on it. Apparently it was originally a script for French Connection 3.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. I want to do some research and maybe do an article about that.
That's
like
cool.
Scripts that got turned into something else. But it was something that like...
I know who's writing that for you, Steven Scarlatta. That's like right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah,
that's
totally
a sweet
is.
Spot.
He's the one that would know about it. But yeah, it started as a project that was intended to be French Connection 3, and Hackman was not on board with it, and they just kind of repurposed it and turned it into Nighthawks.
And Hackman in part two gives one of his best performances. He gets drugged on heroin and he has to like kick it over this long sequence of the movie. And even though it's a part two, it is one of the best performances you'll ever see. It's
really?
Just genius. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
I think he cites
it as his best.
Oh, really?
Wow. That sequence. Yeah, it's really great.
So, yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, Nighthawks is pretty much kind of like a cat and mouse chase between a guy that's like a hitman slash bomber played by Rutger Hauer, and Sylvester Stallone's kind of like, you know, typical super cop guy. Mm-hmm. He's married to the bionic woman in this, Lindsay Wagner, and he's chasing this guy. But there's a really great sequence on a, what is that called? The, I can't remember. It's a...
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know why I don't know the name of it. It's like when you get when you're getting teleported from a wire.
It's like the
flying fox or something.
No, like the trot, like the it's like a little,
like a tram,
a tram, like a tram. Yeah, there's a great scene on a tram where they're kind of holding.
Without
people
Becca, we just don't have any general knowledge.
what is real life?
Where is our doctor? We need a doctor.
We need a woman in the room.
What is a vehicle to transport people up a hill?
On a wire. Thanks, Alex Trebek. Where are you?
Also worth noting is Joe Spinell's in the movie.
He had
a long term relationship with Stallone. They were good friends, and I think this is the last time that they worked together.
Spinell was good at being friends with a lot of powerful people. He knew how to be in the room, you know.
But just Spinell's watch that great. Spielberg he's great clip. In it. Yeah, he is great.
I think he's always great.
Yeah,
he's a good guy.
And the other title I saw, which believe it or not, I've never seen, but don't you know? Speaking of William Friedkin, To Live and Die in L.A. Is one that they put out
the Blu-ray.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was out yet.
Oh yeah. They put it on, and it's great.
Love that
it
film.
Is great. That's also, you know what? I think that would make a good double bill with Manhunter. William Peterson's in it, and it's got a great. It's a similar, you know, not really a serial killer, but he's a counterfeiter played by a very young Willem Dafoe, who's just insane in this movie. But I was, the reason I bring it up on a horror show is I was kind of blown away by just how violent it is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of gun violence, but like they
and big
show
twists
you
of violence that surprise the hell out of you.
Twists of violence. Yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff in this movie, but absolutely looks fantastic. You know, great soundtrack by who is it?
Wang Chung.
Yeah.
It looks like, I remember the aesthetic of it is very Florida, even though it's LA. Mm-hmm. It looks almost like Miami Vice, which makes sense because it's Miami.
And there's one chase, you know, if you want to talk scares, there is a car chase sequence that pretty much is on a parkway, but going in the opposite direction. And I've never been more terrified in my life watching. I was just so on the edge of my seat. So there's some good stuff in there. Yeah. But yeah, if you want a little left turn from horror, I would recommend some of the stuff that they're doing with Shout Select because it's pretty cool.
It does feel like a Michael Mann Friedkin crossover.
Yeah. Oh, God.
it really has that vibe.
Yeah, that'd be a good double bill for sure.
I actually forgot. I did watch one other thing just today, but it's real brief. It's if you're a Nick Winding Refn fan.
Oh.
You know, I wasn't crazy about Neon Demon. I might revisit it before I do my top 10 just to see what I think after being...
Yeah, and I think it's on Amazon Prime now.
After the initial thing, because it's so aesthetic that, you know... But the film that just hit Netflix streaming was the 50-minute documentary that came out about 2 years ago.
Oh, about the making of...
My Life directed by her wife. It's very light. It really should be an extra on a DVD. I was shocked that it got its own release, to be honest.
Right?
Because really, there's no story there. And he's kind of a bit of a sad sack the whole time. But it makes him a little more endearing to me. He seems a lot of people, he's always being called pretentious by a lot of people, like especially things like Neon Demon. They see it, those who don't like it, they throw it. You watch this and go, no, that's not really who he is. Like, I mean, maybe it comes off that way. The funny part is it starts with Jodorowsky like reading his tarot and telling him what to do with his wife. And I love it. And at one point, Jodorowsky reads his wife's tarot towards the end of the movie and says, the only way you'll be happy is if you divorce him. And I'm like, that's the greatest thing ever. It's like, you'll only be free if you leave Nick.
That's amazing.
But it's interesting. You get the feeling he never thought the film. I get the feeling in this one, honestly, that he never thought that film was going to work. Mm. And he was only doing it because as a director, you have to keep going. Yeah. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever thought it was going to work. In any shots where you see him behind the scenes, I get the feeling he knows he's sabotaging his career because he didn't want to be too popular.
Right.
And so I kind of
like that movie, actually.
I mean, it's aesthetically, it's interesting, but again, it's no Drive.
It's not, and
that's the difference, right? It didn't have that. So it's a forgettable documentary, but if you watch Neon Demon and it was absolutely your jam, check it out. You'll see an artist in the throes of making. The best parts are seeing that Ryan Gosling, it's proof evidence, is the best human that we have in movies.
Oh,
because
totally.
He comes off, he's playing with kids.
Yeah.
He's like helping his buddy. At one point, Refn goes, look, we need some more money for the movie. Somebody in, where are they shooting? Bangkok has said they will pay us $30,000 if me and you show up to a screening of Drive and talk. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I'm going to push for $100. Will you do it if we do it? And then Ryan Gosling just takes a second. He's like, if they put the cash in a suitcase, I'll do it. And then and then they dress up and they go and they get the cash. They count it. He's as long as it's going towards the movie, man.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right. So he's got integrity, man.
Yeah, he does. He really does.
And shout out to his movie, Lost River, which I'm still singing its praises.
Oh, dude.
Like Refn, it doesn't completely come together. But man, I'll take that over Neon Demon.
I
think it's a great movie.
My wish is to get Gosling in here to do a horror movie.
Yeah.
I want him to do a horror movie so bad, but he's so busy.
He's busy. But here's the thing, Ryan. He's a big listener of the Shot podcast. So if anything's going to hit,
Gosling, come on, man. We need you. We need to hear
and
about
bring
your
in the Gyllenhaal. Come together.
Oh, dude.
That's a good double.
Yeah. I just rewatched
you get
nice
that. You get that combo. You're just going to get a Dead Heat remake from me.
But I'd watch the shit out of that with those guys.
I would too. They'd have a lot of fun too. So anyway, that's worth checking out. And I asked you guys just before the show because we knew Becca wasn't coming. I said, hey, let's just.
Yeah, some
really
Netflix
quickly,
recommendations.
Just throw out a few each.
Oh, totally.
I think we could do this every week, even if it's just one or two, because sometimes you do have to scour deep into it to find interesting titles.
Right.
And I think let's do it. Let's just throw out a couple.
Yeah, I wrote a couple.
I grabbed a few. I mean, we
just fire them out.
Yeah, Kidnapped.
Which one?
I wrote
that
one too.
Yeah, which is Spanish. Miguel Angel Vivas, I think his last name is.
Well, both of you recommending. I
which
should
is,
add it to my queue.
Oh no, you definitely should check this out. It is more of a execution dependent kind of story because there's not much to it. It's a home invasion movie.
And Rob doesn't really like this, and this one's very real.
Dude,
scary.
This is
actually scary.
It is very. I remember when it first hit. My ex girlfriend at the time was like doing stuff. She was at school and she was doing some homework, and all she heard was screaming and crying, and then lots of Spanish yelling. And she goes, what are you watching in there? Because it sounds like from out here, it sounds incredibly disturbing. And I'm like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
It is incredibly intense.
Selling me on it.
he uses split screen. Just in pure emotion, pure, raw, gritty emotion, it is really intense.
Whenever people do lists of Home Invasion, I always put it at the top of this is one that actually makes it feel real. And he uses long takes.
Yeah.
Background information at the start where you don't see something coming. Yeah. It's a movie. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
All righty.
What else you got, Rob?
Oh, I wrote down five quick ones. Let's see. And I kind of went just all over the board. So Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, is on Netflix Instant. If you've never seen it, one of my favorite anthologies. Three great stories, one great wraparound. Technically, it's Creepshow 3. But if you're just looking for something fun, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Candyman, Farewell to the Flesh.
All right.
A lot of people talk about the original. The original's great. I kind of like 2. 2's interesting because at least it gives it a little bit of a backstory. I think Tony Todd's great in it. And, they reuse a lot of the same score stuff.
Directed by the guy who made Guns and Monsters.
Yeah.
That's the thing that held me back from buying the vinyl release of Candyman 2 soundtrack. I'm going to get the same thing.
Yeah, it is exactly the same thing. But that one's great. Also, I mentioned on the show a couple of weeks ago, if you haven't seen Cold in July yet with Michael C. Hall, directed by Jim Mickle, it's probably one of my favorite things I discovered this year. It's a really great thriller. Lots of twists and turns, and Michael C. Hall done it right after Dexter, so it's just great, great filmmaking. Don Johnson, one of the best things he's ever done, is in a supporting role.
Yeah.
So strongly recommend that. That's the same director that did Stakeland and We Are What We Are.
Even better than Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Yes, indeed.
Throwback.
Also, I don't know if we talked about it much. There's a movie on Netflix called He Never Died with Henry Rollins.
I never saw it. That's why.
It's really cool. I think what works about it is Henry Rollins. It's one of those things where if it was anybody else, I don't know. He's kind of like a fallen angel that. It's really fun. It's his performance is what makes that movie really stand out quite a bit. And I believe it was a Kickstarter movie initially he was involved with, and they wrote it for him and everything. Yeah. But if you like Henry Rollins and you want to see something kind of like, I almost want to say like it's kind of prophecy-esque, but it's not. It's like
it would make a good double bill.
Yeah. That would work with that.
Better or worse than his Johnny Mnemonic role? Remember as Johnny Mnemonic Doctor?
Oh,
much
do.
Better. That was a great much role. Better.
Come on, I love Johnny Mnemonic.
And lastly, tying into our guest for the second part of this show, if you haven't watched Scream yet, Scream the TV show, it is on Netflix Instant. And in particular, if you just want to watch a one-off episode to enjoy our interview, I would recommend season 2, episode 10, which is called The Vanishing, and it was directed by Dennis Widmeyer and Kevin Kulsh, the guys that did Starry Eyes in the Valentine's Day segment in Holidays. That was one that, in particular, our guest is really strong in and has a lot to do. And I just remember being so impressed with what Kevin and Dennis did on that episode that I recommended it to you, Elric, because I didn't think you had gotten up to season 2 yet. And I rewatched that particular episode. I was like, you know what? If you've never seen the show, I think this actually kind of works to give you an idea if you'd be into it or not. So I'm recommending you watch that before our interview drops on Monday. I think that's a good way in. Mm. And, even if you don't like the show, we're gonna talk about some fun things involving how the TV world kind of works. Yeah. So I think it's worth listening to for that.
I hear you. What about you, Ron?
I had one more. Two more, actually. I had Stage Fright, Jerome Sable's slasher musical.
Oh, yeah, I never watched that.
It's a kick. It's a lot of fun. It's once you kind of wrap your head around, it's a comedy. It's a horror comedy that's also a musical. Then you have a lot of fun with it. Basically, it's about a girl who goes to a music camp, and they put on their big show, and she wants to be the lead. And her mom was a big stage actress who was viciously killed. Meatloaf is in it. And basically, it's just about a girl trying to aspire to her mom's dreams and wishes and all this other kind of stuff. But there's a slasher running around the camp and killing people. So you have these kind of moments where they break into song and dance, and it's big numbers with lots of kids, and you got Meatloaf doing his shtick. I think it was in the cafeteria and all this stuff. And then you have the serial killer who's in a kabuki mask, and he's basically wielding these two circular saw blades, and his thing is heavy metal. So it's like a nice contrast behind between
freaking movie.
This really goofy shit and then like heavy metal stuff. And have you ever seen Jerome's Legend of Beaver Dam short film? It's kind of like very much in the same theme. But I remember watching it and I had a blast. And every time I put it on for somebody like in the background, they're like, what is this?
It's so Beckett's not even funny. That's all I know. I remember her talking about it years ago.
It's a kick. It's a kick. And then the other one, you know, I feel like we should drop a little plug to Shudder because Shudder's doing the good Lord's work.
Next week we'll do all Shudder ones.
I pulled one from Shudder that I think just dropped on there, and that's Shadow of the Vampire.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Which is the Nick Cage produced movie with
I've actually never seen that one, but I've been wanting to see it for a while.
It's really, really great because it's basically a spin on the making of Nosferatu, very kind of meta, and basically you're on the set of the making of the film, and Willem Dafoe is Max Schreck.
But why didn't you kill someone unimportant like the script girl, not the camera operator?
But he's legitimately a vampire, and it's all about him. The director knows.
Malkovich.
Yeah, the director knows, but no one else knows, and he's just like, he's constant. The director owes a debt to the vampire. You know?
And it actually has its roots in some fact, which is that no one knows much about Max Schreck, and Schreck in German meant death. Yeah. And so it was this actor that no one really can account for who just appears, and it's at a time where special effects, makeup effects, hardly existed. Yeah. And look at the guy.
Yeah.
So like Nosferatu is this incredible being. So you're like, I remember the initial stories. And then this is by the director, E. Elias Merej, who did Begotten, which is like another thing that looks like it just appeared out of the ether. It doesn't look like a movie somebody made.
Yeah.
We were talking about getting him on because Begotten was going to get a new Blu-ray restoration. I think it got delayed a bit. This was before we changed over.
Right.
But I think that would be a fascinating interview at some point. That's a good movie.
It's a really Udo Kier.
It's a funny. Who's a comedian?
Carl Elwes, isn't it? Yeah. And
Carrie Elwes plays the cameraman.
Yeah,
who's always drunk.
Who's always drunk. But God,
Dafoe got an Oscar nomination for support, and it is really. I think it's one of the best horror comedies in the sense of actually being a comedy about horror films versus a horror comedy. Yeah. You know,
it's so good.
It's a good movie. I'm a big fan of that one. I'll just throw out the ones that you'll already be familiar with that I think are great. If you haven't seen it, like Antichrist is on there. I have the criterion of that. I just think it's one of my favorite, you know, modern horror films. Late Phases, you know, we talked about
Late Phases,
really fun
great.
Werewolf film. A movie I really liked from a couple years ago, the guys were going to do the Death Wish remake, is Big Bad Wolves.
Oh.
The two Israeli directors, Quentin, it was Tarantino's favorite film of that year. It is a dark black, and I mean as black as you can go, comedy, revenge film. Mm. And some people, it is not their taste. I've had friends who have recommended they did not like. I feel like in the cheap thrills world, if you like that kind of a movie, this would appeal. The one that I know, the genius who picked this up, called The Canal. There was a great film selector once who gave up to go do bigger things.
I personally did not put that on there because I knew you would be bringing it to the table.
Now, big fan of The Canal. That's actually one of my favorite of the kind of atmospheric dread horrors, almost Fulci-ish, the horror scenes.
Yeah.
And then just one that I want to recommend, of all these, the one I would recommend most as an actual movie, and I bet almost no one will have seen it. The guy who directed that movie from a couple years ago called The Possession, the Jewish
horror.
Oh, yeah.
He had made these great foreign films that were all like thrillers, psychological thrillers, and he made one that just blew me away called Just Another Love Story.
Mm.
And it is a great, great thriller, and it plays with, like, you know, a character. It kind of like Memento. It plays with those kind of ideas, but when I saw his three films and I heard he was directing Possession, that's why I ran to see it. And it was still well made. I actually thought The Possession was a really well directed film. It just didn't have that much new to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he also, didn't he do The Substitute? Or something like that, which was like about an alien teacher.
Oh, he might
and
have.
And I think
it
was the movie that Ghost House, I think, picked it up. And then that was the movie that Raimi recognized and was like, oh, he's got chops. And then they put him on The Possession.
Interesting.
The Possession is also a really good movie.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a really well
put
together.
It's a really well put together movie.
Yeah, it's a really good.
Legitimately, some good scares in it. You know, I wanted to revisit that over the Halloween break.
Negan as a dad. Negan's softer side.
Yeah, softer side of Negan.
Wow. But no, I really recommend that one to especially those of you who, you know, are interested in saying that goes off the just straight horror channels. I think it definitely was one of those. I remember a friend of ours was actually coming in here, and I think his name was on a list of directors, you know, because obviously you are when you make things like The Possession. And I just remember going, that's the guy. I think he can make a really great movie at some point. But who knows? Maybe he has to write them too. I don't know if he didn't write The Possession. Anyway, those are some fun ones for you guys.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll keep this going. one. Maybe we'll do an all Shudder app.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
Or
too.
Just across the board, because I think maybe you guys all can stream, tell yeah. you guys can tell us on Facebook. You know what service do you use? I mean, mm-hmm. I use Hulu,
Amazon's really
good. Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, and Shudder as my primary sources for like streaming digitally. Mm-hmm. And then occasionally, you know, if I have. I go off and on Showtime and HBO depending on what's out, you know, what I want to watch. Right now I have HBO because, you know, of Westworld, and I have Stars because of Ash vs. Evil Dead. But once those sign off, I sign off.
Right.
Move on to the next thing.
Smart. Anything else?
Well, we were – I mean, we could –
Boy, without Becca, we're just kind of like lost puppies here. I will say I wanted to talk a little bit quickly about Intruder just because I brought it up last time.
Oh, that's right.
Last week, and I didn't get a chance. So
– Yes, talk.
Because it's one of those movies that when I grew up in Connecticut, and it was this place called Mad Mike's Video, and it was an awesome like little place that had, you know, shelves isolated by directory. So you had – Cronenberg, and it was all the Cronenberg stuff, and it was and the Raimi shelf was very, you know, not used often. It was like the VHS tapes were always in stock, and it was also where I got to see the Sam Raimi short films. Mm-hmm. And they had a bootleg of all these short films that Raimi, Rob Tappert, Scott Spiegel, that they all did. Helping Hand. I don't know if you guys have seen Helping Hand.
I have.
It's basically about the hamburger helper hand, and it like goes bonkers on this woman. And Intruder was always up there, and I've always kind of just glossed it over as just kind of like complete sleaze. I was like, I don't know what this is. But I caught up to it. I think I watched it on Shudder. And
uncut?
Yes, I think so, because I've never seen the original cut, so I don't know. But it was pretty bloody. Pretty bloody, but I want to know what the appeal is, because I mean, like, obviously the gore, there's a gore factor to it that you have a lot of fun with, and then Scott Spiegel can't help but throw himself into like crazy camera or trickery all the time. Like literally in the first 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, I'm in the grocery cart. Oh, yeah. I'm sitting on the shelf next to a box of cereal and somebody's grabbing me. You know, it's like all these little like camera tricks. But then it's just like literally a cat and mouse movie where everybody just wanders around. But, you know, I had mentioned it last week and everybody's like, yeah, Intruder. But I'm just really curious. Have you guys seen it recently?
Not since it got re-released.
Well, I worked on that Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And I did all the interviews with everybody in it for it.
Right.
Including Scott Spiegel, which I was excited about because Evil Dead 2 is like my favorite movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd never seen it. I think a big part of it was the notoriety that
it's a super
it's been
bloody.
Cut and you can never get the original version. This is the first movie that Greg Nicotero, Howard Berger, and Robert Kurtzman did as K&B.
Right.
So that's another like
thing great,
about it.
Great work. I mean,
And it was produced by Lawrence Bender. Yeah. You know, one of his first
that's
movies.
Right.
He went on to produce all the Tarantino stuff pretty much up until Inglourious Basterds. Bless you. So I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, it's kind of like that weird pocket of for years I was looking for Crime Wave because it's just it's that Sam Raimi Coen brothers. How can that not be amazing? You know, it's just from that period. I think it's just that weird thing that we have about being unable to find these movies.
Yeah.
But now that I watched it, it's a pretty goofy slasher movie.
Super goofy.
There's a great.
There's a fun little twist that you're kind of like, oh, didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's pretty silly, but it's fun. Yeah. But I remember thinking that was the thing I thought you mentioned the camera angles. It's like at least Raimi's had a reason for being.
Oh no, totally.
But this is like literally. I think you get the POV of a rotary phone from under the phone.
Oh, absolutely. Where she's like putting her finger across the screen, and
and you're just kind of like, okay.
But the thing,
cool,
the funny thing about it is that I see that and Scotty did. You know, he did Hostel 3.
Yeah.
And he hasn't, there's no change. Like, you watch Hostel 3, and it's like, camera angles everywhere. Yeah, and I think he did one of the From Dusk Till Dawn sequels as well.
Yeah, the second one.
And it's like, never change, please. Never change. The stuff is amazing. It's so much fun.
Me or wasn't he meant to be on our show once? I remember coming to Killer TV, and he was meant to show up there.
It was when I interviewed him for Intruder. I tried to book him on the show.
I thought he was coming, and I thought we showed up. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, he canceled us, I think.
I'll
have to one day. Okay. We should use this moment as a platform for people to tell us who they would like to see.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we've done that. Yeah. Where it's like, give us a wish list.
The answer is Ken Wiederhorn.
2017's coming up. I mean, we've literally got the show booked through the end of the year.
Yeah, we've got some fun stuff.
Yeah.
But last Scott Spiegel thing, the opening of Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, where he's trying desperately to deliver that giant pile of pizzas.
Yes.
There is a scene where he kind of puts him on a banister and a guy comes out and starts eating it. That's Scott Spiegel, director of Intruder, trying to steal the pizza.
Nice.
So
nice, nice.
There you have it.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. Yeah, let us know who you think we should try to get next year.
Yeah.
And reasonably.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about film as political, but one thing, that's something I know Becca was really invested in.
Yes.
So we're going to wait on that. One title I want to throw out there, so maybe you could watch it or get this before we even talk about it, is a film I hadn't thought about in a long time, but wherever you fall on the political spectrum. But for me, the character I kept coming to was the character from Roger Corman's one kind of serious foray into Oscar-y type serious dramas, which was The Intruder, funnily enough.
Yeah.
Also got The Intruder.
Two intruders.
It's a character that William Shatner plays, a really serious character, a guy who goes down to kind of stir up racial prejudice, even though he doesn't necessarily believe it. He's kind of doing it to just stir, and that idea of somebody who tells you what you want to hear without necessarily having that ideology. And I've heard a lot of people comparing Trump to every character under the sun, right?
Yeah.
That's the only character that really came to mind. And I was like, in a really real way, in a way that's kind of scary because you don't know what somebody believes at all.
Mm.
And that to me is more scary than somebody who really believes something, an ideology. Yeah. This film is, I really believe it's Corman's masterpiece. And if you watch the documentary on Corman, it's a real tragedy because, well, maybe it's a bonus because we got so many crazy movies, but had that film hit, he probably would have gone in a totally different direction.
Sure.
But because it was right in his drive-in period, no one went. Yeah. And he said, there's a great interview where him and his brother are like, well, we made these very serious movies. What should we do? He goes, well, we can never do that again. You know,
right.
Like, we can't make a real movie. We have to go back to, and of course, we got the post cycle and everything afterwards. But I would really recommend it. It was really hard to find for a long time.
Yeah.
When I saw it, I had to go to that Eddie Brandt's place.
Mm.
It has recently been re-released on DVD, and it's only like $12. It was AKA, and this is the best thing about it, the actual other title was I Hate Your Guts. So if you look up the poster for this, it's Intruder, AKA I Hate Your Guts.
Wow.
I mean, it's just one of those films I think is really timely, and I think it'd be ripe for rediscovery to discuss. And we'll go into in depth. I think that'll be a good topic for us next week when
Sure.
comes back.
And the one thing, I mentioned it last week, but I want to remind people that Severin Films put out The Killing of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote an article after we talked about it on the show last week. I think a perfect complement to it, actually, is Adam Simon's 2000 documentary, The American Nightmare.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely for what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, because if you haven't seen, I recommend them both, because The Killing of Violence shows you a lot of these violent incidences that happen in mostly televised in pop culture, whereas The American Nightmare is guys like Romero and Toby Hooper and John Carpenter responding to those very things and saying how they influenced their movies. So I think
that's
if
you want to go a third, you would go our buddy Joe Madry's Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue, which
gives
it a really
Netflix.
Nice narrative. Yeah,
that's on Netflix instead.
It's got a really good flow the way they tell that story.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really good, simple, historic recap.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
So, you know, those things will help you in that conversation if you're interested.
Sure. We're going to tackle those. And we thank you for listening on social media. Shockwaves Pod on the Twitters, and then it's just Shockwaves Podcast on Instagram.
And
Shockwaves on
Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got them all right.
Give us a shout out. Say
there
hey.
You go. And come back Monday. We're going to talk to John Carter from Scream.
From the producers of Insidious and The Purge comes a new kind of exorcism. Incarnate follows a scientist with the ability to enter the subconscious minds of the possessed. He must save a young boy from the grips of a demon with powers never seen before while facing the horrors of his past. The Dark Knight's Aaron Eckhart and Game of Thrones' Carice Van Houten star in Incarnate, directed by Brad Peyton, director of San Andreas, in association with IM Global, Blumhouse, and WWE. Incarnate also stars David Mazouz of Gotham and Catalina Sandino Marina from Maria Full of Grace. Not only is Incarnate an entirely new take on the exorcism genre, but it's also the only wide-release horror film this holiday season. So grab a friend and go see Incarnate in theaters on December 2nd.